Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I am Mike Spofford, and he is Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, three words to start today's show. He is back. Aaron Rodgers confirming via his social media accounts that he has been medically cleared. He is good to go. He will be the Packers starting quarterback in Charlotte on Sunday afternoon.
So my wife was sitting on the couch when this news happened. I was, you know, just trying to get a couple of my things together. We also found out that Trevor Davis was going to be the special teams player of the week, so I was writing that up.
There we go.
And then
you were doing all that while I was playing racquetball and being completely oblivious to all the news of the world.
You were doing it right. My point being, Aaron Rodgers goes to his Instagram account and posts a message with one of his hospital photos after surgery, post-op, basically saying, I'm medically cleared. And Twitter, social media, everything just explodes. I was watching ESPN at the time. Within 3 minutes of that, ESPN has a news alert out there. The world was waiting, Michael. You could feel the anticipation throughout the day on Tuesday. Rodgers ends up going on the web, gives the update. After 8 weeks of, you know, being on the sidelines here, including the bye week, he's back, he's medically cleared, and he's aiming for that game on Sunday against the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, and as we've been talking about, the Packers, you know, still clinging to playoff hopes, obviously. 7-6, you have 3 games left. It looks like 10 wins is the bare minimum to try to get a playoff spot in the NFC. So Rodgers is back to try to run this out. 3 more wins, try to get the Packers to 10, need a little help in a couple of other areas to make that happen and to keep the Packers' postseason streak alive. But obviously, as we talked about yesterday, these opponents coming up now, this is a little different slate. I know Brett Hundley had to face the New Orleans Saints, Pittsburgh Steelers in his run of games, but this is now going to be 3 consecutive games against teams that are above 500, 2 of them in Carolina and Minnesota, considered legitimate Super Bowl contenders in the NFC. As exciting as it is that Rodgers is coming back, and obviously that boosts the Packers' chances, this is by no means a given the Packers can get to 10 wins because these are some tough teams.
Yeah, and at the same time, it's funny because you see the percentages out there, what the percentage chances the Packers can make the playoffs, what it isn't that they can't, if they win all three, what they are. I said this in the Insider Inbox going into what would be Thursday's edition. Leave the percentages to the pundits. For the Packers, there is one number that matters, and it's that victory, number 8, on Sunday against the Panthers. You're absolutely right, Mike. To parlay that, to get 3 consecutive victories, not easy to do, especially for this team trying to get on another run with 5 straight to make the playoffs all told. But at the same time, I think this game against Carolina really is the key to that, as far as trying to open that door. This is a very talented and deep Carolina Panthers team. We'll be talking about it in the segments to come.
Yeah.
But with Aaron Rodgers being back on the field, he is the equalizer. He is the guy that tilts the field. He puts everything back in your favor. And I think having him back, Clay Matthews said it best on Sunday when he was asked about the possibility of Rodgers being back, it makes everybody better because everybody gets that extra little step, you know, in their walk and just a little bit more excitement, understanding who they have playing for them at quarterback. And again, nothing against Brett Hundley, but we're talking about a 2-time MVP, a future Pro Football Hall of Famer. Aaron Rodgers is a guy that when he steps on that field, he lifts everyone.
Yeah, he absolutely does. And you wonder now, as we go into this Carolina game, if the experience that this Packers team went through last year plays into how they go about this just from the psychological standpoint. This team was 4-6. They had to win 6 straight to get to the playoffs to finish off the regular season last year. The slate wasn't as daunting maybe as we're seeing right now, but within those 6 games, 3 of those were against teams that went to the playoffs. They beat the Seahawks, they beat the Texans, they beat the Lions. All 3 of those teams were in the postseason, and the Packers beat them during that home stretch last year to get into the playoffs. So they definitely have that going for them. I think that's an experience that that this team will draw upon, that this team will rally around. Obviously, going on the road this week, Carolina, a team that's coming off of arguably its biggest victory of this season. Well, maybe second biggest because they did beat the New England Patriots earlier. But to beat the Minnesota Vikings, who were on a winning streak of their own, knocking them off in Charlotte and you know, Carolina taking another step where they're staying in the hunt for their division title down there in the NFC South. This is just going to be a great matchup. You can't ask for a better December matchup than Packers-Panthers with Rodgers coming back after the long layoff.
Yeah, and you have to imagine the NFL's excited about this too, to get back one of the league's legitimate cross-platform stars to get that attention shining, especially with Carson Wentz going down right now and being an MVP candidate himself.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at Rodgers, the start he was off to, Michael, and I don't want to get into hypotheticals because it doesn't do anybody any good, but, I mean, he was off to an MVP-caliber type start with how focused he was, how he was throwing the football. Seems like the arm strength is still there based on the practices we saw. But more than anything, I don't know, did you ever see the movie For Love of the Game with Kevin Costner?
Absolutely, yeah.
He has that line, cue the mechanism.
Yeah.
There's something about Rodgers where it's like he's always focused, but there's just something about these moments where he just enters like a zone. And it just, it's such a, it's like he's playing the game at a different level. Now, mind you, I'm sure there's going to be some rust to knock off. He hasn't been in a football game now for 2 months. But at the same time, with his talent level and the fact that that arm strength didn't diminish, at least it didn't appear to, I think they're going to be smart with him. I think the game plan is going to be creative. But having him on the field, I really think it's going to be something to watch and see how he competes at that level after having 2 months of having to wait for that moment.
Yeah, and when you talk about Rodgers playing the game at a different level, all you have to do is look back to the last game that he finished in Dallas. That two-minute drive against the Dallas Cowboys, that was a quarterback playing a different game than everybody else was playing. He was playing on another level. And if he can play like that, you got to like the Packers' chances.
And to Mike McCarthy's point, too, on Monday, he said they learned a lot from 2013, both with his recovery and rehab, and also him coming out of that when they won that game against the Bears to get into the playoffs. Now they'll lean back on those experiences and try to, you know, make that happen once again.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, it is our middle show of the week, which is when we take a close look at the Packers' opponent, and this time it is the Carolina Panthers. And when you look at Carolina's offense, it starts with that quarterback, Cam Newton, and not just in terms of passing the ball, but as a running threat as well. This is as accomplished a dual-threat quarterback as there is in the NFL right now.
Yeah, and this year, I don't know exactly what their plan was going into the season, but it definitely seems like they emphasize him running the ball again this year. You know, they kind of tapered off of that a little bit the last few seasons. Certainly when you run that much, even though he is such a big body and has so much athleticism, you put yourself at risk there with the amount of hits he takes and certainly how that damage can accumulate throughout the course of a season. That being said, Cam Newton's on pace for his most rushing yards since 2012. Passing-wise, it's been really feast or famine for the most part. Honestly, looking at his you know kind of resume over the last 6-7 games, had some games where he's been exceptional, had some games where he's been in that 50 to 60 range for passer rating. So you kind of know the book on him. We saw it 2 years ago. Can make some absolutely huge plays with his arms, but also can miss some of those downfield passes that you know you would hope that an MVP quarterback could make. But as you said, Mike, with his ability on every single play to either extend it, come out of the read option, you have to be prepared for so much with Cam Newton, and it's what makes this offense as volatile as it is.
Yeah, and as I mentioned in our Insider Inbox column, as much excitement as there is about Aaron Rodgers being back, Aaron Rodgers can't help stop the run, can't help tackle Cam Newton on the read option, can't help cover Devin Funchess or Christian McCaffrey or Greg Olsen, who they have back now from injury at tight end. There's a lot of weapons here on this team that that the Packers defense, a banged-up Packers defense at that, is going to have to deal with. When I look at that game last week, Minnesota at Carolina, but Carolina getting the victory, they rushed for over 200 yards against one of the best defenses in the league. Now, the bulk of that was on two carries. Jonathan Stewart had a 60-yard touchdown run, and Cam Newton had a 62-yard run in the fourth quarter that set up the game-winning touchdown. But that being said, you don't see the Vikings give up one big play on the ground per game, let alone two like that. And this Carolina offense, they'll with what the Packers have put on film defensively against the run the last 2 weeks against the Buccaneers and the Browns, I think Carolina's going to try to ram it down their throat.
And Michael Spofford, you said it perfectly there when you said the 62-yard run that set up the game-winning touchdown. You can play 58 minutes of great run defense. You can play 59 minutes of great run defense. But when you have those big lapses, those explosive plays, we hear Dom Capers talk about it all the time. You and I discuss it all the time. those are the game changers. Those are the things that can really tilt the game. I'm interested in seeing Jonathan Stewart because I think that 60-yard run is huge for him. He'd been off to a slow start this year. I mean, even with that 60-yard run, his yards per carry average is still only 3.5.
Yeah.
Christian McCaffrey is incredibly versatile. Is their leading receiver right now at 67 receptions. But he's also had a hard time getting going as a runner out of the backfield.
Yeah.
But what makes them so dynamic is how he can catch the football. You have a guy like Curtis Samuel, the former running back, I believe, at Ohio State, that's become a receiver.
Yeah.
Fozzie Whitaker's a really dynamic scat back that's a number three back. A lot of different guys they can turn to that you have to be aware of, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why, even though they might not have had as much consistency as they want with their run game, they still find ways to make explosive plays, and doing it against the Minnesota Vikings is a huge confidence boost for them, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and we'll have to just see how the Packers decide with the secondary, especially the cornerback position, as banged up as it is. You're going into this game really assuming that Devon House isn't going to play, which I don't think he will. Based on what Mike McCarthy said, certainly. You're going into this game with Demaryius Randall and Josh Hawkins as your top two cornerbacks. You've got Morgan Burnett, Josh Jones, Jermaine Whitehead, HaHa Clinton Dix. You've got a mixture of safeties that can play in these nickel and dime packages and play different roles. You know, but you've got to have somebody account for Newton, both as far as a scrambler, yes, and the read option when he, you know, tucks it and runs on those designed running plays. And this is a tough quarterback to bring down. I don't care if he's in the pocket. I don't care if he's in the open field. He's not easy to tackle. He's 6'5", and what is he, 235, right, 240, something like that. This guy's not easy to bring down, and you've got to be able to rally to the ball. You can't – you're going to have somebody spying him, so to speak, or somebody who's – you know, the assignment is Cam Newton. But just to rely on that one guy to make the tackle every time, that's pretty dicey as well.
And this is the chess match that Dom Capers and his staff are going to have to figure out. Your best spy as far as the linebacker position is Clay Matthews. It's been that way for the last 4 or 5 years. He's just very good at it. But at the same time, if you do that, then you're taking him out of the rush game.
Exactly.
Another guy that could be a candidate for that is Morgan Burnett. Morgan Burnett right now is their star slot cornerback in the nickel. So you'd be taking him out of the coverage game. So depending on, you know, Josh Jones could do it, but he's at back safety now. So how they play that game, I think, is going to be really important to this game. Or if you feel like, you know, Blake Martinez would be up for it. All things that you have to be considering going into this thing. But more than anything else, it's just having that awareness of where he is at all times. And the fact that it's not going to take one guy to always get him down. It's going to take a guy stopping him, the pursuit and finish, guys finishing to the football and making it a group collective effort. That's the challenge with them. You know, even though they didn't win that game 2 years ago, they have really done a decent job against him in their three meetings with him in the past. It's just, you know, the fact that on any given Sunday he could still be, you know, put that explosive play together.
Exactly. It's he can get that explosive play at any time, and that's what you've got to cut down on if you want to hold this offense in check.
Yeah, and one more thing I want to toss out there too. Probably one of the better stories in the league this year, Greg Van Roten is a backup offensive lineman for the Panthers. You might remember him.
Yes,
Mike.
I do.
Played for the Packers in 2012 and 13, was out of the league for 4 years, and has been on their offensive line this season. Wow. So something to follow if you're a Packer fan.
That's, yeah, I did really not know that, but that's an interesting tidbit. With that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz over there, and Wes, shifting gears to the Carolina Panthers defense. It starts with one of the best linebackers in the league, and that's Luke Kuechly. This is a guy, I think maybe the phrase sideline to sideline defender, he kind of invented it almost, because this guy's just everywhere, whether it's pass coverage, whether it's chasing down running backs, getting an interception here or there, you name it, Luke Kuechly can do it.
He is the gold standard for NFL middle linebackers, inside linebackers, however you view them. Just wrapped up now his sixth consecutive 100-tackle season. You remember Albert Pujols, you know, before he obviously went to the Anaheim Angels?
Oh, yeah.
He had one of those box scores where there's no let-up. He entered the league, and he had, like, 30 home runs the first year. Like, every year was, like, pristine.
Yeah.
Luke Kuechly, I know he's had some injury issues here and there, but if he keeps this up, he's going to have one of the prettiest like career stat sheets ever. I mean, hundreds of tackles, 15 interceptions, 5 forced fumbles, so consistent over all those years. And I know, Michael, we talk a lot about Blake Martinez, and people will ask in the insider inbox every once in a while, could Blake Martinez be Luke Kuechly someday? Like, when teams talk about, when fans talk about their inside linebacker, he's the comparable. He does everything, mm-hmm. and it's really incredible the career that he's put together for himself.
Yeah, you said it. He is the gold standard, but the Carolina Panthers defense has not helped to lead this team into playoff contention just on Luke Kuechly alone. You look at this pass rush for Carolina, a familiar face, Julius Peppers, and then another veteran in Mario Addison. The two defensive ends in this defense both closing in on double-digit sack seasons now, 9.5 sacks apiece. And when you have that kind of production coming from either side with your pass rush, that's going to make things difficult on quarterbacks, and that's something that this Carolina defense relies on.
Yeah, and the Panthers actually stuck to a similar script as what the Packers did last year with Peppers. He's a late-down rusher. He's only started 2 games this year. But when he's been on the field, watching his snaps, being mindful of his workflow, he's been incredibly productive again. He did a great job in Green Bay for 3 seasons, a team-high 25 sacks during that time, countless forced fumbles and pass deflections, even a couple interceptions. He was a great signing by Ted Thompson. But I think there was sort of this coming home feeling, not just him going back to Carolina, but also going back into a 4-3 scheme.
Yep.
Just seems to suit him well in his skill set. So he's been tremendous. And then they also have Mario Addison, who's really come on for them over the last couple of years, was also a rotational rusher for a number of seasons, now has actually worked his way into the lineup and is tied with them with 9.5 sacks. I believe both of those guys in the top 10 right now for sacks in the NFL.
Yeah, and when you look at the back end for Carolina, I don't want to necessarily call it a weakness because this is a pretty good defense, but there isn't anybody who statistically necessarily jumps out at you. I think really the front 7 of this defense is where it starts and stops. Obviously, with Aaron Rodgers coming back, he's going to try to take his shots if he can be protected from that ferocious pass rush. He's going to take his shots at these corners and these safeties. Mike Adams is a safety with a couple of interceptions, but nobody else jumping off the page with a Pro Bowl type season in the secondary for Carolina. So I have to believe, even as much as the Packers have revitalized their run game out of necessity here, you know, during the stretch with Brett Hundley, with Aaron Rodgers on the field and you know, the way this Carolina defense has been vulnerable to the pass at times, I see Aaron Rodgers trying to take some shots.
Yeah, the strength of this defense definitely lies in its front 7. I mean, Thomas Davis factors into that as well. I mean, you talk so much about Kuechly, you sometimes forget about him. Mike Adams was a tremendous signing for them. He fits what they do well. They actually also signed Jairus Byrd, the former Pro Bowler. He's a backup for them right now in their secondary. Cornerback, a little bit different of a situation for them right now. You have James Bradbury, you have Darrell Worrell. Both of those guys were draft picks a year ago, so they're very young at that position. Ladarius Gunter ended up in Carolina as well. He was claimed, I believe, by the Panthers earlier this season, but really hasn't played any. They've been very healthy at that spot. So they're younger on that outside, but I think having Adams there on the back end has kind of helped solidify all that. They're a formidable group, and they're going to present challenges. So seeing how the Packers react to that will be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, definitely. But before we go to a break, Wes, we'll take care of a little sponsor business. Attention, Packers fans, we're calling you to fill up with Campbell's Chunky Chicken Noodle Soup. We're talking delicious, hearty soup packaged in an exclusive Packers Superfan can. These cans are limited edition for all you football fanatics out there. So don't miss out. Go on, huddle up, and fill up with this hearty soup. Chunky Soup, the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, quickly before we go, we need to give a hearty shout out to the latest selections for Packers Hall of Fame induction, which will be coming up this summer. And a congratulations to offensive tackle Mark Tauscher and kicker Ryan Longwell. Two great selections to go into the Packers Hall of Fame. You certainly can't argue with these players' credentials. And both of them have great stories. Mark Tauscher, the homegrown kid, Auburndale, Wisconsin, goes to play for the Badgers as a walk-on, almost actually leaves the program but comes back for one more year when Ron Dayne breaks the record and the Badgers get back to a Rose Bowl. He becomes a 7th-round draft pick of the Packers, goes on to start for a decade at right tackle. And then Ryan Longwell, brought in as an undrafted kicker the same year the Packers drafted another kicker in the third round, Brett Conway, and the undrafted guy beats out the drafted guy, and then he becomes the Packers' all-time leading scorer over a 9-year stretch in Green Bay.
Yeah, and you're a lot smarter than I am, so you'll be good on this. But I actually already thought Ryan Longo was in the Packers Hall of Fame when they announced it. Just he had that kind of career, and
yeah.
I thought
yeah.
he had such a great quote to one of your questions about how his approach when he came in and just every single week of that training camp going up against Conway, it was just make it to the next week, make it to the next preseason game. And then lo and behold, he ends up getting that job, that opportunity. And then next thing you know, he's off and running with a very lengthy, long, productive career. Mark Tauscher, I don't think there's enough you can say about what he did coming in. I mean, him and Chad Clifton were the pillars for both Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre. I mean, that's exclusive company to be blocking for 11 seasons in his case. 132 of the 134 regular season games he played, he started in.
Yeah.
Beginning, he got thrown right into the fire in the second game of his rookie season and then took the job from there. That is not an easy thing to do, to be thrown in there, be asked to do that, and being as accomplished as he was. A very nice honor for him, for sure.
Yeah, you look at the beginnings for both of these players. The Buffalo game for Mark Tauscher early in his rookie season, he gets thrown in for Earl Dotson and then basically doesn't give up the job for essentially a decade, overcoming some difficult injuries along the way. And Ryan Longwell, second game of his rookie season, he misses a chip shot field goal in Philadelphia that cost the Packers a 10-9 loss. And what do you know, he goes on to become the Packers' all-time leading scorer, a record that has since been broken by Mason Crosby, but just a great career. It'll be a great summer night in July when these guys get inducted.
Two guys that really personify sustainability and consistency. It says a lot about them.
No question about it. But we've got to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.